It's the same old game of words.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
So serious.
I am Iron Man.
This is a tasty burger.
Welcome to the In Session Film Podcast.
Welcome to this week's extra film segment for April 23rd, 2015. And I'm still a little sick, but doing better, JD Duran.
Oh, that's what's up with your voice.
Yes.
I'm Matt Oakes from Silver Screen Riot.
Yes, still recovering. We finally got out episode 113 on Wednesday. This is Friday now that you guys are hearing this. So over the weekend, as you know, Matt, as we talked about last week, I went to Disney World. And I came back sick.
And you got deathly ill.
Got deathly ill. It was so funny today at work. A coworker was asking me about my trip to Disney. And he was like, well, what'd you catch? The flu or did you catch a cold? And I said, I caught Disney World. That's what happened. So
did you have literally the time of your life?
It was a really good time. The actual experience at Disney was awesome. I had a blast. It was just coming home. On Monday, that was the problem. That's when I started to feel really ill and been recovering all week, but doing much better and hanging
what
in
was,
there. So.
What was it that was going around Disney? Wasn't it like measles?
It was measles, but I think it was at Disneyland in California.
Land. You escaped measles land.
I escaped measles land and instead
and
went to flu land. exactly. But we're doing okay. Everything's good. How are things in Seattle?
Oh, it's been a gorgeous week until today. Today's been really rainy and crappy. I've been mostly inside, but things are good. Gearing up to the film festival season. I'm going to an event to cover it tonight. It should be fun. Get to dress up and go with my girlfriend. And
very cool.
Friend of mine's presenting the documentary that he did, and hopefully there'll be some good free booze and drinks because that's the only reason I write about movies.
The only reason, yeah.
Man. I actually hate them.
Nice, but that's enough incentive. Very cool. Tonight, after we get done recording this, I'm hoping to catch this concert that's being played at our university where. The university orchestra is doing this a concert where they're playing nothing but film scores all night long. So
you're just going to go with a raging hard on.
Well, I'm going to try to go without that, but I am going to be pretty excited. Yes.
So. That might make the whole, staying at your job thing a little difficult.
Yeah, it could be. So
JD, what's that in your pants?
Yeah.
You don't know my relationship to film scores.
Yeah. Everyone will be quick to judge with all those girls running around, and it's not that, it's the film score music. No, I'm going to try to behave. Everything should be good, but I'm pretty excited.
You're going to be like a 13-year-old girl at a Jonas Brothers.
Probably. I'll be the one in the front row screaming and having a good time. So.
Play some more Team Rizna!
Yeah, exactly. I do know one of the big movies they're highlighting tonight is Jurassic Park. So a lot of John Williams being played tonight. I'm pretty
classic
excited.
Classic J-Dubs.
Yeah, absolutely. Pretty excited for that. So, well, for this week's extra film segment, Matt and I have two fun films to talk about. We're going to be talking about...
Two boring films to talk about.
Depending on how you look at it, we are going to be discussing True Story... The latest dramatic film starring James Franco and Jonah Hill. And in the second half of the show, we're going to be talking about Matt's new favorite film, Lost River. That is Ryan Gosling's directorial debut. So that should be a lot of fun as well.
A quick factoid. Original name for that was Lost Vision.
There's probably a lot of irony in that once we get to that review. I'll hold off my thoughts for now, but let's get into it.
And here we go.
You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast Extra Film Segment. Matt, why did you steal my identity?
Because I wanted to look good with a bowl cut.
I can't tell you what really happened.
Okay.
Okay, then why flee to Mexico right after they were found? I mean, you have to understand that makes you look incredibly guilty.
Sometimes you have to accept looking one way in order to protect something more important.
Chris, if you're hiding something from me, I will find out. That's what I do. I look everywhere. Why did you kill them?
All right, True Story is directed by Rupert Gould and stars James Franco, Jonah Hill, Felicity Jones, and a few other people make an appearance as well. I'll toss it to you first, Matt. What did you think about this dramatic film starring comedic actors that we know of together anyway? True Story.
Meh. I think that, the problem with this movie is... Really, that's all the response I can really seem to muster. Like, it's fine. It's not a disaster. There's good things about it, but it could have been so much more. With the talent assembled, I had hoped that it would try and distinguish itself from like the true crime genre, but it doesn't really. It plays like this cat and mouse game, kind of, but like there's. I think in my review, one of the main things I wrote about was how it's this basically this battle of wits, but neither the characters are very witty and their battle is just very mild. So by the end of the film, and you could consider this spoilers, but it's a true story. It says at the very end, in the credits, there's just a superimposed text that says, oh, the writer, I don't even have my notes in front of me. I forget Michael. What their name is. Whatever and whatever. Franco and Hill are still friends to this day, and they talk once a month on Sundays. And like, what? Like, where was that story? Like,
sure.
How did these people become friends? I don't know. There's so much that just like, it just didn't go the distance. How about you?
Well, the thing about this movie, one, I agree with you in a lot of ways. And while I love Jonah Hill and James Franco, especially in their comedic movies together, overall, I do agree with you that this movie is a series of missed opportunities that I certainly want to get into. I do think that going into this, I was really interested in them being in a film together that is more of a dramatic take than a comedic one. And totally. I will say, I do like the performances here, especially... from Franco.
They're fine.
I would argue Franco is really good, and I'll get more into why I think that here in a second. But in general, though, I do agree with you that there's a lot of meandering, especially from the direction. When you get to those ending title credits, as you're talking about, a lot of it doesn't make sense. And in fact, it felt like there was a turn in the third act of this movie that was almost like a completely different movie altogether as to what they were setting up until that third act, and it just didn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, there were just some strange turns within it, as if like these very subtle movements were supposed to communicate volumes, and I don't think that they necessarily did. I think the most egregious example of such is, and this is only going to be something that people who have seen the film will catch on to, but the idea of the wink during the trial. Like,
yeah, sure.
And then like that's supposed to set up this whole... other timeline, and it basically forces our character to reconstruct all the previous events, but it doesn't have enough oomph to it. It's all very like low key and mild, and when you talked about the prospects of these two comedic actors working together and like how that might be interesting, that's what I was thinking going into it. This is going to be an interesting spin on a true crime story. I was hoping that there would be some some dark humor to it, but there wasn't at all.
I agree.
There wasn't even a semblance of dark humor, and that was a huge misstep.
And in fact, there was probably only one scene where there was like an intentional step at having a joke in the movie, and it was pretty lighthearted more than anything, and it was just kind of a jab at the Jonah Hill character, and I quite laughed at it, but other than that, there really wasn't any humor. I mean, the tone of this movie was very serious. We have a serious story to tell. We have very serious characters. We have serious themes we want to explore. But none of it is very well handled. And like I said, it was a series of missed opportunities because I do think there is a compelling story here. And I think they set up a lot of the mystery behind the Franco character really well at the same time. And we get a little bit of backstory on Jonah Hill's character. And I thought all of that was kind of intriguing. And when we did get the scenes between Franco and Hill, I thought those were pretty well shot. And there was a lot of great dialogue that really put the story in motion early on in the film. And I started having questions as far as like where this is going to go. I was really intrigued. And they started to set up that mystery. Like, did he do it? Did he not do it? And it was mostly straightforward, conventional storytelling. But like you were saying, like there's these subtle turns where it becomes more about the ramifications of how this story affects the Michael character and more about the trial itself than it was what they were doing in the first two acts and the relationship dynamic set up between these two characters. And like you were saying with the end title credits, with them becoming, I guess, these friends that still meet, by the time we get to that last shot of the Michael character, you don't get any sense of that. If anything, you get the exact opposite, right? Like one of the last...
Oh, exact opposite.
The exact opposite. You think that the Jonah Hill character is going to hate this guy for the rest of his life. So it really made no sense to me.
No, and for me, that was literally, like, during the screening, I went, what? Like, I audibly muttered out loud, like, that doesn't make any goddamn sense. Like,
it was a weird turn.
And quite honestly, like, it just kind of points to an overarching sense of directorial ineptitude for a director to make this movie and then tack that ending on, because it's totally out of sync with everything that we've seen.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is. It felt like it was kind of thrown together last minute. Like, he had a sense of what he was trying to do with the story. Because, like I said, that first act, and once the story started rolling a little bit, I was on board for the most part. But then the second half of the movie, it was like he was lost. And like I've said a couple of times, to me, there was a lot of missed opportunities, which was really frustrating because I do feel like there are seeds planted here that could have been really good, especially when you're talking about this two character play between Franco and Jonah Hill. I thought their conversations were great, but each time they were together, those scenes were very short, and then it would fade to something outside the jail, and then we would come back in. And I felt like those sequences and the way that it was handled from a direction standpoint wasn't very good. And then you also have Felicity Jones's character, who she's going through her own arc here where she's starting to crumble, but we don't know what her main motivations are. Like, it's not very well explored. And then you even get to the trial part of it where we finally see Franco's character's motives a little bit, but his motives are never really explained. He kind of has this catharsis during when he's on stand, and that's it. That's the only explanation we're really ever given. We're not exactly sure why. And then there's that final sequence between the main two characters at the end where they're fighting, and it's almost like they hate each other. So I feel like there were so many missed opportunities for this to be good, to add depth. But as soon as we would start to get there, the director would cut its legs out from underneath himself.
Well, and kind of going back to what you were referring to, especially in the beginning, I think that there isn't a natural sense of propulsion to the way that the script is set up. It's all just kind of janky in its construction, really. From their conversations with one another at first, there's kind of a natural momentum to them, and they move and flow into each other fairly gracefully. But I think that really comes apart in the middle of the second act, where it just, like, it gets really loose, and their relationship becomes fairly undefined. When they introduce the police detective on the case, who's there to try and convince Michael, Jonah Hill's character, to give up evidence on James Franco. I think that just further exacerbates the problem.
Yeah.
Because and especially like the second part of that when they meet again, like it's just I was just like shaking my head, like I just don't really care. I don't think this works.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And speaking of other weird scenes, there's one moment that I liked the moment itself, but within the context of the greater story that's trying to be told here, it's very odd. And that is the scene between Felicity Jones and James Franco. And again, I don't want to give away details to avoid spoilers, I guess, but the scene itself is fantastic from an acting standpoint. I thought both of them were superb in that scene, but in the context of the story, it's also very odd. It felt more like a dream or like a hope-like sequence. Like if I ever got a chance to meet this guy, this is what I'd say kind of thing.
Yeah,
instead of probably what would have happened in real life.
I think you're onto something there. And it's funny that you mentioned that scene because I think that's probably my favorite scene in the movie.
Yeah. Oh,
and yet
yeah.
it does totally stand out.
Yeah, for sure.
It doesn't really, I don't know, the lead up to it is a little, I don't know if I buy it as like
I agree. Yeah.
Very organic.
Sure.
But then the ramifications afterwards are nothing. They're nilch. It happens in a vacuum and it didn't really happen. It's all very strange.
It is. I will say one of the reasons it works, and like I was saying, is
but
because
Felicity Jones is really good.
She is very good. I think her and Franco are great. And going back to Franco real fast, I think he's really good at being this really creepy, unsettling, mysterious guy that is in jail and accused of doing these acts. And we're not exactly sure what his angle is the entire time. And we do get the sense that he's hiding something or that he has motives as far as how he's trying to handle this trial and everything. Like it felt like there was always a loose screw there, but he was also always calm and collected. And I felt like he gave a pretty gripping performance. I was fully buying into the Franco character. And same thing with Felicity Jones. She was fantastic whenever she was on screen. She just needed more writing and screen time because, like you were saying, the setup to that scene between her and Franco isn't quite fleshed out like it needed to be. But she is pretty riveting when she is on screen, even though she's mostly in the background. But go ahead.
In terms of Franco, I think that I wouldn't go so far as to say that that he's good or great in the role. Maybe he's good. He's definitely not great. I think that what he's able to do is kind of capitalize on his strangeness. there are these like eccentricities to James Franco, like in his grin and in his eyes.
Sure.
And like he's supposed to be this man of many trades. He's an artist, he's a professor, he's an actor, he's a director, he's a writer, he's a poet. But it's always been, there's been this dubious cloud kind of placed on Franco, like do we really buy that this guy's really that smart, or is he just like kind of manipulating him his way into all these situations? And I think that that's what works in the movie, or what should work.
Sure.
But they don't go far enough. And I feel like every time that we're set up to be like, oh, something big's gonna go down here, like we just don't get it. And maybe that's the point, that this character is like so slippery and so quietly maniacal that you never kind of get the resolution that you're looking for, and you never get the confession that you're kind of praying for. But it doesn't necessarily work in the context of a film.
Yeah, I mean, I can certainly see that within the greater context of what's going on, because it doesn't quite work. I would argue, though, that Franco's performance is pretty great, because I think from the moment we see him, we're pretty sure that he's the guy that's done it. At least I was able to buy that. But at the same time, I could also see why the Michael character, the Jonah Hill character, could be seduced by him, because he has this weird charm about him at the same time. And that's just something Franco is very good at portraying anyway. He just has that charisma about him, and he gives us just enough of it that you can see why the Michael character would be so manipulated. But at the same time, he does show us how manipulative he is and how unsettling he is. And I thought Franco played those beats really well, even though the scenes... I would argue it was very good. Even though the scenes themselves aren't super strong within the story, I think Franco took fully advantage of the scenes he was in. I thought...
Well, put it this way. I think that we've seen great performances from Jonah Hill. Moneyball, he's good in. I don't quite know sure. if he earned his Oscar nomination, but that's for a different time. In Wolf of Wall Street, I think he's absolutely sure. fantastic.
Yeah, I agree.
James Franco, I think, is wonderful in 127 Hours. I think he also works really well in comedy. But this, I wouldn't say, comes close to either of their best performances or either or any of their better performances. I think they're both like they're apt, but they're not anything special. They don't go above and beyond.
I will agree with Jonah Hill. I will disagree with Franco. I think Franco gives a really great performance. Hill is kind of pulling the brakes a little bit comparatively to those other examples that you pulled out. I do think he's serviceable here and he works. I think the biggest win that Hill has in this movie is that he doesn't really turn the Michael character into a hero, but really he becomes a victim.
Very morally gray.
Yeah, but sure.
Back to Franco. I'm just out of argument's sake. Like, tell me a specific example of a scene that you thought he was great in.
Well, a couple of
putting you on the spot, Jace.
Putting me on the spot, which is perfectly fine. I think some of the scenes early on where he is trying to portray this charismatic, I didn't really kill my family kind of thing. I think he was trying to pull sympathy out of the Michael character, and I think he was able to do that very quietly. But yeah. But at the same time, he has this look about him that is kind of off-putting. And
see, to me, like, that sums up James Franco. That's just him being him. You know, he's got like this kind of dubious quality to him where you're like, oh, this guy like looks like all smiles and laughs, but I don't know if I trust him. But you see, know, that for me is just Franco.
Well, maybe, but I don't know him outside of film, I guess. I only know him on screen, but when I compare that to something like 127 Hours or even This Is the End in his other comedic work, I don't think they're near the same. I don't think they're even close.
Okay, what about Oscar host Franco?
Well, that's different because he was high the whole
same
time.
Same character. Playing Oscar host Franco.
I don't know if I would go that far. I think he is very good here, and I think he pulls off that character really well. And I think what's also interesting about what he's doing is this film is kind of exploring this notion of how despicable human beings like that can become rock stars of a sort. And yeah. Even in real life, there are reports out there, and it could be the case for this guy too, of like Scott Peterson had received multiple marriage proposals and stuff.
Oh,
and they kind
Charlie
of
Manson gets yeah, them all the time.
Yeah. All that kind of stuff, which is pretty disturbing. And I think it's when like when Franco kind of comes out and says a line like that and he's kind of smirking about it and then it cuts back to Jonah Hill's face. I think that kind of says everything about what this movie could have been and how much of a sociopath that the Franco character is. And I think he did nail that. It's also my frustration at the same time because I'm like, why couldn't we get that the entire time? And instead we're meandering to all these other things that are pretty shallow.
Yeah, and again, like, I think I was being a touch hyperbolic in terms of my criticism of Franco. I don't think he's bad. I just don't think that he's great. And this movie so much depends on not only the performances but the writing behind it. And I think that is really where it falters the most. Like, the performances, sure. Again, and I'll say this ad nauseum, they're fine. They're good. They're just
– great.
They're not great, and I think the problem is because there aren't great scenes. Like, for a movie so focused on these two characters, you would think that there would be a lot better scenes written between the two of them. Sure. And yet, there aren't. There's a lot of fairly good scenes, but nothing great. And I think yeah. that it really sums up the movie. It's kind of this amalgamation of true crime tropes that when added together, you know, we add sure. together all these fairly decent parts, but it doesn't necessarily equate to something that's good yeah. or special or, you know, different. Yeah. And I think that that's sure. really what holds it back yeah. from recommending sure. to people.
Yeah. And I mostly agree with that. Again, the only part where I'll disagree is I do think the acting is great. And I do think that there are great scenes, but they're so far and few in between. And when they do become great, we cut away to something completely different, or we cut away to Felicity Jones, who is good, but she's basically by herself through a lot of the movie. She doesn't interact with a whole lot of people. And when she does,
she just gives Jonah Hill back rubs.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. The last thing I want to say, and then we'll get to final thoughts, is the biggest thing I took away from this movie, if you're going to take away anything thematically from it, is that sometimes we are victims to our own ambitions, because the Michael character was very much set on this redemption factor because of him being fired from the New York Times. And because he was very heavy set on that, that when this opportunity came up, he wasn't very clear on what was really happening around him. And there was huge side effects because of that. His girlfriend was crumbling right in front of him. Even himself, he was going a little bit mad. He became very soft in terms of the mm-hmm. Longo character being able to manipulate him. Even the victim's family was very hurt by him writing this book, and he just didn't see any of that. And I think sometimes where we can have ambitions and we can go after them and be very strong in them, at the same time, it can give us tunnel vision, and sometimes we don't see those ramifications. And I feel like the film had the backbone of that, which was fascinating. It just wasn't explored terribly well, as we've already articulated.
Well spoke. And kind of going off of that and moving into my final word on the matter, I definitely see what you're saying about like this idea of ambition becoming, you know, this restrictive
sure.
tunnel vision, drunk goggles way of seeing the world. And I think that another element that plays into that and is played within the film, but, you know, to various levels of success, is this idea of the art of seduction, right?
Sure.
Everyone's yes. kind of yes. trying to, especially, you know, the Longo character is trying to seduce people with yeah. charm and
yep.
with wit.
Yep.
And the problem is the film itself, for all of these ideas of like playing with you and supposedly, you know, toying with your emotions and manipulating to feel one way where in fact sure. the truth is another way, it's not really good about that. I feel like we know what's what
sure.
all along. There's yeah. no big surprises. There's mm-hmm. there's no wool that's been pulled over our eyes that is unveiled at last, and we're like, oh my God, now I see the film from this whole different angle. It's all very straightforward. It's very cut and dry.
Yep.
It's, you know, it's okay. It's like organic dog food, you know. It's
sure.
It's like, sure, yeah, it's better than regular dog food, I guess, but it's
yeah.
yeah. It's one of those movies that it is not bad so much as there's just nothing, and there are good parts, but there's yeah, nothing that
sure.
that really pushes it over the line of, yeah, you got to see this.
And what grade would you give it?
I reviewed it on my site and I gave it a C. So kind of right falling in the middle there.
Very nice. As far as final thoughts for me, I mean, there's really not a whole lot to reiterate. I completely agree with Matt in a lot of ways. There are good parts to it. Ultimately, it just doesn't come together at the end. It just meandered too much, and it could never really settle on what it wanted to be. I felt like it was overly ambitious artistically, but yet very underwhelming when it comes to the narrative. It was very straightforward for the most part, and then the third act becomes this wavering mess that was just kind of all over the place and never really answered any questions that it was setting up before. It was yeah. so weird, but I did like the acting in it. I would probably give it a C+, B- in that range. It's an okay movie, not one you have to go seek out in theaters at all, but one if you want to catch up with when it comes out on
you know,
Blu-ray or VOD.
one more quick comment. It's funny because, you know, right before we were doing the show, I asked you again, and I asked you yesterday, what are we talking about again today? And you're like, true story. I was like, oh, right. And same thing happened yesterday. And when you told me last week, oh, yeah, right. And when I wrote my review, which was, let me look at my review, April 16th, about a week ago, I had seen it the week before, and I was like, oh, right, I forgot. I'd seen this movie. It's just... Sure. It's so forgettable. I've literally forgotten that I've seen it like four times.
And I could certainly see why that's the case. I think when it comes to the end of the year, I'm probably not going to be thinking about this either. Although I do foresee myself remembering the performance by Franco and Felicity Jones, at least. Definitely not Hill, but I really, really like Jones and Franco in this movie. But overall, I agree. It's pretty forgettable for the most part. And I don't blame you. But anyway, be sure to go check out our thoughts on this on Letterboxd at letterboxd.com/InSessionFilm. And as Matt said, you can see his review at silverscreenriot.com.
And if you agree or disagree with what we've got to say about the movie, you can let us know. You can leave a comment on the Facebook page at facebook.com/InSessionFilm or tweet us at InSessionFilm.com or SSR.com where you can get me and I can argue with you. You can also leave us a comment on the Google Plus page or email at InSessionFilm@gmail.com.
All right. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Matt and I are going to talk about the lost vision of Lost River. Ryan Gosling's directorial debut. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Sharknado.
This episode of the In Session Film Podcast Extra Film Segment is brought to you by the awesome guys at the True Bromance Film Podcast, a podcast I cannot recommend highly enough. It's hosted by Hiro and Barry, two awesome guys, and each week they get together and they discuss usually a new release that's out in theaters and also some sort of top five that is inspired by that new release, which is kind of neat because they do like a good cop, bad cop kind of deal with it, which is always a lot of fun. They also discuss other movies they've been watching recently. They have some really great guests on their show as well. I've been honored enough to be on there a couple times myself, which is always a ton of fun. Their chemistry is amazing. It's a really great show. It's a ton of fun, really well articulated, and one you definitely got to check out. You can definitely hit them up on Facebook and Twitter. Just search True Bromance Film Podcast. You can find them on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and pretty much anywhere else you can find film podcasts. So definitely go check it out. True Bromance Film. It's one you're definitely going to enjoy.
You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast Extra Film Segment. JD, I have nothing to say about this clip. It is probably just noise and some stuff.
It's Nicholas Winding Refn.
It's Nicholas Wannabe Refn.
I'm actually not interested in the buyout. I'd like to just pay the 3 months and keep the house and stay in the house.
Do you mind if I ask why?
Because I have two boys, and that is our home. And I grew up in that home, and that is our home.
Look, I can make a note for you, right? I can write a novel. But at the end of the day, you're going to have to come up with some of this.
Okay.
Now, I don't know what you can do, but you want to have a think about that very seriously, what you can do, what you're willing to do. And you're a very beautiful lady. And I don't care what you do. I'm not what I do.
Lost River is directed by Ryan Gosling, stars Christina Hendricks, Ian De Kasterik, Matt Smith, Saoirse Ronan, Ben Mendelsohn, Eva Mendes, and I guess some other people.
Pretty much it, though.
Yeah, it's a movie about a guy who collects trash and sells it to another guy, and a girl who works at a female mutilation club, and there's a girl named Rat who owns a rat.
That's good enough. Yes.
I think that's pretty much what this is. There's a lot of bright colors. Ryan Gosling has very much tried to ape a Nicholas Winding Refn film. He's not necessarily done a good job. I didn't feel like there was any movement, any momentum, or were there acts in this movie, JD?
Maybe.
I don't know. I was like, wait, what? Like, there's just nothing's happening. Like, there's stuff happening, but there's no sense of, like, a story with a beginning, a middle, and an end. It's just like some guy came up and like kind of puked after eating a Rainbow Bright.
Yeah, I guess that's one way to describe it. I do agree with you that it's obviously very much influenced by Nicholas Winding Refn. There's a very dark tone to it. There's very little dialogue. The score even feels like a Refn film. The exquisite lighting and camera angles, as you were talking about, and the story isn't much. But I will say, unlike you and just about every other critic out there, I kind of dug the movie. And I don't know why. I don't know why.
I just like,
well, actually, I do kind of know why. But for the most part, I do agree with you. There's in terms of story, you really, really have to kind of peel back the layers to find something, because it's all over the place. And kind of as Matt was describing, it's essentially about this family, in particular the eldest son and the mom, who are trying to, in their own ways, keep their house afloat. And,
you know, I'm going to interject to say, I didn't even know that they were mother and son until like the end. I thought that they were banging.
Really? That I never got little, that.
I don't know. This film is garbage.
Well, and most people are feeling that way. I would say I would take this over Only God Forgives, a movie that I absolutely loathe.
Yeah, see, this is exactly his interpretation of Only God Forgives.
In a lot of ways, sure.
I think Only God Forgives is a much better movie than this.
See, I will disagree. I don't think what Only God Forgives gives me is very little. I wasn't able to grab onto any character emotionally. I didn't grab onto the story. It was pretty much just a lot of and style carried over from Drive into something that I didn't care about. And in here, it is pretty much the exact same style and tone, but I was a little bit emotionally involved with the story because ultimately...
With who? Rat?
Well, sort of, yeah. The rat character and her...
The rat character.
Not an actual rat, but her name is Rat, the Saoirse Ronan character. Her and her relationship with the eldest son and the mom. And the reason I was able to, I guess, sort of buy into it is because this movie talks a lot about where they're at in Detroit. Yeah, it does. If you pay attention,
no,
clearly you weren't paying attention.
Okay, the sets were cool. Yeah, I will give you that. And the whole underwater societies whatnot, like that was like a cool jumping off point. But okay, here's my analogy. It's like you're at this beautiful location and you see this crystalline lake and it looks so beautiful and you're like, oh my God, like I can't wait to jump right in. And you get up on the diving board and you spring off into this beautiful dive and it ends up being frozen and you just break your neck. Because that's what this movie is. It's a frozen over pond that looks beautiful but really is just icy cold.
See, for me, it was a little bit different. I think for me, it would be where if you were to jump off of that, where the water would look freezing and cold and dark and disturbing. But once you land and you kind of get to the bottom, it's actually pretty warm and a little satisfying. Because, and the reason I say that, and you keep interrupting me because I can't get there, is because why
Disneyland.
Disneyland.
Measles.
Is because, yeah, this film, while shot in Detroit, it could be Detroit or this lost, flooded city. It doesn't really matter. All we know about it is it's a very broken city. There's a lot of lostness of life. It is very flooded and washed out like our lives can be. But at the end of it, this story is really about love and family conquering all of that. And I love that. I very much dug that. And it was about them kind of strapping their bootstraps, so to speak, coming together as a family, surviving this ordeal and getting the hell out as fast as you possibly can.
Okay.
And that, well, I dug.
See, I can see like these very loose, like, analogies that could be made about, you know, the fire rising from the ashes, all the burning going on at the end, and
sure,
the immolating relationships within it. But quite honestly, like, we're talking about a movie that has Ben Mendelsohn slamming up against Christina Hendricks when she's basically wrapped up in like an old school, like,
it's weird,
plastic
so weird
action figure case. And he's screaming like, "Oh, you just want my d-." And God, I just like, I wanted it to be over.
This is one of my favorite, this is one of my favorite Ben Mendelsohn performances I have ever seen. He is out of his mind. Crazy, but
I don't
even
get it.
I don't know if you need
to. Who is
though.
He? What is he? Like, there's no motivation behind him. I liked when he was dancing,
but are there in these movies, like, if we want to call this a Nicholas Winding Refn movie, which it pretty much is, there's not much to those characters, a whole lot,
especially in terms of artistry. There's artistry and there's subtext, and I just didn't get any subtext.
The way that I read those characters, especially if we're going back to how I read the film in terms of this family overcoming its adversities, is that Ben Mendelsohn was one of two characters that was after this family. In particular, he was after the mom character, and he was always lurking. He was always trying to intimidate and sometimes being pretty aggressive, much like the other male character who is after the eldest son in this movie as well. And to me, they kind of symbolize that adversity, like it was them having to overcome that. And I didn't need any other backstory besides that, because I understood it. I understood what Gosling was trying to do, or at least that's how I read it, and it completely worked for me when I saw that come together at the end. Even though it was strange, it was weird, I completely agree, and it doesn't make sense unless you think about it, but when I read it that way, it made sense to me.
I'm willing to give, you know, give you the fact that you got these interpretations out of it. But having said that, I think you might be over prescribing value to what is actually on the screen, because to me, it just seemed like a bunch of pretty gobbledygook with good actors and just playing make pretend. And like you talk about these adversarial characters, like Ben Mendelsohn. I love Ben Mendelsohn, but I got no sense of who this guy was or why he was being such a maniacal douche.
Well, like, and he kind of owns and runs that place, right? Because he was the head of that bank or whatever the mom was at the beginning. He was running that club, or at least hosting it. We do know that, because he had this really strange karaoke moment where he was asked to come on stage as the host. And then he has that weird dancing scene at the end that you were talking about. And I got the vibe that he was kind of the ringleader of whatever town that.
And then the other character, the one that I think Matt Smith plays, like the bully, there was no context to these characters. There was nothing that I felt like I could relate to or really even understand. I think it's a kind of film where you have to go into it willing to fill in the picture.
Well,
right?
But don't you have to do that with art sometimes? And don't to do that with films like this? Because Refn is the same way.
I wasn't done. But touché. When you actually fill it in, it's just still a bunch of garbage. Because I don't know. There didn't. And, you know, I might be wrong. I've only seen this once. I saw it right before started recording this.
Sure.
But I just didn't get anything out of it. And I will admit, I wasn't paying that much attention to it.
See? That's the problem.
But
you got to watch the movie, Matt.
like, I like Only God Forgives. I feel like there is symbolism within that, and there's a sense of internal logic, and there's this kind of like directorial language that he plays with that I just didn't see here. There was nothing that really grounded this movie go on.
See, I didn't get that at all. In fact, it was kind of funny because a few months ago I was talking on the main show about how I had seen that documentary, My Life, directed by Nicholas Winding Refn, that came out earlier this year. And even in that documentary, Nicholas Winding Refn himself said, "I wasted 6 months of my life. That was a movie." That was his own words. And I felt that when we reviewed that last year, I felt like there was no direction in this movie. There was nothing for me to engage with. But like art, some people will like it and some people didn't. And I just loathed that movie. I did not like it outside of the score in a few scenes here and there. And with this one, while it meanders, it's kind of all over the place, it did feel like to me that Gosling had a sense of vision, while strange and as weird as it is, that he stuck to that. And I was able to read that. I think it was that combined with this, I guess I'll just call it biasness. I'm biased because I'm from Michigan. I'm from almost Detroit, you can say. And I grew up in a pretty slummy area that was kind of, I was able to see myself in this story a little bit. And I think when I saw them overcome that adversity in a place that I know was Detroit, Michigan, I kind of saw myself in that. So on top of that, and I just like those themes anyway, I've talked a lot about that on the show anyway, that I was just able to see and grab something from it.
Sure. And I'm not here to say, oh no, you're wrong about your interpretation, because I hate when people say, no, this was a bad movie, because film and all kinds of art form are inherently subjective. And whenever you're trying to prescribe objectivity to it, it just makes you seem like a fool, because you know, you can't say what this person and what X and what Y is going to get out of art. But then again, I think that there are things that we as a society can more easily associate with and more easily say, oh, that is worthy of our attention. And I think the fact that critical consensus has been fairly muted on this, to put it in the most positive sense possible, kind of speaks volumes to what the product is. You know, we get a movie like this, and Ryan Gosling has come out and I think kind of embarrassingly said, like, hey, like, if I wasn't the guy directing this, like, people would have liked it more. Or maybe I'm misquoting, maybe like a producer said that, but somebody involved with the film, I thought it was Gosling, said that. And I think that is not true. I think that regardless of who makes this movie, you see it and you say, oh, this is somebody trying to do Nicholas Winding Refn. You know, it's like we get a lot of movies where people try and do David Fincher, or people try and do Wes Anderson. And like, Wes Anderson, I think, is a good example, because you see cheap independent movies made all the time, kind of in this quirky style of these like idiosyncrasies and these colorful worlds. But they're not Wes Anderson. But you so clearly feel the influence.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yet when it's not that, it almost makes me like it less, and if you see what I'm saying. No. And that carries over to Wild River, whatever this is called.
Lost River. I will say while I liked this movie and I liked what Gosling was doing with it, I completely agree that the biggest deficit to this, and why a lot of people will be turned off, is because it really is just a byproduct. It is not separating himself from Nicholas Winding Refn at all. In fact, if you were to just switch out the names, you would just think it was another Refn movie. It's pretty much tonally
a bad Refn movie.
In my opinion, I liked it better than Only God Forgives. So if you switch that, I would like it as a Refn movie more. But it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, it is very much that. And that's the thing with Gosling, where as a filmmaker, he's going to have to separate himself. He can't just copy almost verbatim another director. But I do see seeds of a good filmmaker here. I think if you were to just look at it like frame by frame, there are some shots that are just utterly gorgeous. He uses the lights really well. He clearly learned how to frame the lighting from Refn extremely well. He took a lot of great notes because it looks gorgeous. But from a direction standpoint, he still has a lot to learn. It was enough for me to enjoy the film, though.
And kind of moving into final thoughts here, you know, again, I would reiterate my point about this is definitely going to be one of those things that it's kind of up to your interpretation of the film. And if you're like JD, really willing to lend it a lot of credence and say, oh, I think he was thinking about this and this and this, then you might find something worthwhile in it. I know that my friend Nick Tiffany, who saw this at South by, really liked it. And so, you know, you're not alone in that. However, this is not a movie for the masses, and that is hardly ever a defense that I use, because I'm usually more on your side in these kind of films. But this one just didn't really connect with me. I didn't feel like there was a lot there. And most egregious of all is the fact that I feel like it's a little bit of shameless mimicry. Really takes it down a good notch for me. So in terms of tossing a grade at this, I'm probably around a D.
Okay, fair enough. I do agree with you, though, that he's pretty much shamelessly stealing the style and tone, and I don't think he cares. I mean, he goes full bore into it, and that's fine with me. It certainly works. As long as he doesn't continue down this route as a director, I still want to see him separate himself, but I do agree with that criticism. Like you were saying, I think if you just fill in the gaps and if you're able to pick apart and enjoy these themes the way that I have, I think you'll like it, but it is just one of those movies that maybe not a whole lot of people will enjoy. Like Only God Forgives, there just has to be certain things to grab onto. But I enjoyed it. I liked that idea of love and family and how they conquer their adversity in this movie. It was fun for me to watch, even though it was very weird and strange. And go Ben Mendelsohn. What a performance. He's so crazy, this movie, but it's so good. I would give this a very generous grade of a B. It's probably not that good, but I enjoyed it to that level.
Definitely. I think you summed it up with very generous. And back to your point on Ben Mendelsohn. I love Ben Mendelsohn. I've kind of been standing by him since Animal Kingdom, which was really his breakout for American audiences, even though it's just an Australian film. He's great in a couple things. Mississippi Grind, which I saw at Sundance, he's really good in. The film's pretty good, but he's awesome, and he's so great. Good in so much. I've been watching the Netflix series Bloodline. I don't know if
I haven't seen
caught
it,
that at all, but he's in that as well. And he's phenomenal. He's really the reason to watch the show. I haven't finished it yet because I got caught up in Daredevil and finally just finished watching Daredevil. But back to the issue at hand, be sure to check out more of our thoughts on the Letterboxd page at letterboxd.com/insessionfilm. And I'm sure to be publishing, probably this will be featured in the weekly review section next week, where I will appropriately tear it a new a-hole.
Yep, and you can see that at silverscreenriot.com. And again, we'd love your feedback. Leave a comment on our website, insessionfilm.com, or hit us up on Facebook and Twitter. And that should do it for this week's show. So not only hit us up on Facebook and Twitter, also check us out on Google+ and YouTube. Just search In Session Film and you'll find us there.
And be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes to hear all the main podcasts and the extra film reviews featuring me. And while you're on iTunes, leave us a review. If you don't, then stop listening. And sign up for the monthly newsletter. Please just stop listening. Sign up for the newsletter over at the newsletter tab on Facebook. Or at the site at filmsession.com/newsletter. Oh, I'm insessionfilm.com/newsletter. I can't talk today.
The In Session Film Podcast is supported by our super awesome listeners like you. If you want to help support us, just go to our website, insessionfilm.com. Click on our bonus content tab on our main menu to hear that bonus content for just a small donation of 99 cents. You can also check out the In Session Film store or just go to insessionfilm.com/donate. You'll see a bunch of information there on how you can help us out. And one thing I would highly recommend is checking out our mobile app, where you can hear every single thing we do under one roof for just a one-time fee of $1.99. You can find that app on the Amazon market for Android devices, the Windows 8 phone store for Windows devices, and the Podcast Box app for iOS devices. You can see all those details on the site at insessionfilm.com/apps. As for the main show this weekend, on episode 114, we're going to be discussing Tom Hardy and Gary Oldman and Child 44, which should be a lot of fun. Not sure on a top three yet. We'll figure that out pretty soon.
You know, they didn't screen that for critics.
I did hear that.
I've not seen it. Yeah.
But, you know,
I
it's
think I know why.
Maybe. It was either that or The Age of Adeline, and I didn't want to do Age of Adeline. So we're going to be talking Child 44. And for our extra film next week, the plan is to do Ex Machina, which is finally here locally.
Yes. Yes.
As well as The Water Diviner, which is directed by Russell Crowe. So we'll be discussing those two films, which should be pretty interesting. Before we get out of here, Matt, any final thoughts on anything?
Quick rundown next week. Ex Machina, yay. Water Diviner, nay.
Okay.
I don't even have to show up. I'm good to go.
Matt's good to go. I do look forward to that. That should be a lot of fun. As far as other final thoughts go, I'm very excited for Age of Ultron coming very, very, very soon. So that, with some of these other smaller films like Ex Machina, I'm hoping that May will ramp up, because we're also getting closer and closer to Mad Max and other fun films. Pitch Perfect 2 I'm also excited about. So summer is getting very, very close. I'm pretty excited for that. So one last thing, make sure once again to go check out episode 113. We discuss While We're Young and our top three movie couples that we would like to hang out with, and we also talk some Star Wars trailers and Batman vs. Superman. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you guys next time on the Incession Film Podcast Extra Film Segment. I was going to say, out of a mediocre film, we got some really great discussion out of it.
Yeah, I agree. Let's launch right in, because I'm on a time crunch. So.
Yep.
Ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-boo.
All right. I don't.
Ready?
What did you want to do to set up the clip?
Oh, what is it?
I have no idea. There's like no dialogue in this movie.
All right. Let's just see this. All right. Well, here's the clip, I guess.
The clip is when she's at the lawyer's office. So.
Is that before he says, I want to... or whatever he said?
Yeah, it's before that.
I'm gonna jam my in you. I don't know. When she's like in that action figure.
Yeah,
case.
Weird. I can't wait to talk about that scene, actually.
This whole movie, dude. Oh, Jesus. Okay. All right. I'll just say something and you can say something.
Yeah, I'll just go with it. Sure.
All right.